For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News, in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. Iraqi forces and Kurdish Peshmerga troops are reporting gains with an operation underway to try and retake the city of Mosul. It's the last major stronghold in Iraq still in the hands of the Islamic State. Mosul was seized by IS in June 2014. Some analysts warn retaking it could take months. State-run broadcaster Russia Today has had all its UK accounts closed by NatWest Bank. It comes after the UK and US said fresh sanctions were being considered against Moscow over its military campaign in Syria. 21 schoolgirls kidnapped in Nigeria's northeast by the Islamist group Boko Haram have been reunited with their families after 2 years in captivity. Sophia Adengo reports from Abuja.
After months of negotiations, the Nigerian government has reunited 21 girls to their families. Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari has confirmed his commitment in securing Nigerians, vowing to rid the country of violent extremism. In its 7-year campaign, according to the UN, Boko Haram has displaced nearly 2 million people in Nigeria.
The president of Malawi's returned to the country after a month-long trip to the USA that prompted rumours he was critically ill or even dead. The government had to publish a statement asking Malawians not to panic about the 76-year-old, but as Dan Ashby reports, many are still not convinced.
Presidents are often greeted by difficult questions when they step off planes, but they don't usually need to prove that they're alive. Thousands of Malawians claim that President Mutharika was critically ill or dead after he stayed in the USA for weeks after a UN meeting. The government says he was meeting development partners while away, but opposition MPs say have not been told why he needed 3 weeks to do so, and they claim it is suspicious that he has not spoken publicly since arriving home.
Greece and its biggest creditors are meeting to begin discussions on whether the country should have some of its debt written off. The left-wing Syriza government is seeing its popularity plummet under austerity measures imposed by lenders who say Athens can't have debt relief without major labour market reform. Jack Parrock reports.
Greece's creditors, which include the European Union, the European Central Bank and the International Monetary Fund, are starting new talks this week with the focus on labour market reforms in return for discussions on writing off some of Greece's debt. The lenders say the country's minimum wage should be lowered, but Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras has vowed to fight that move. Greek debt remains at 170% of GDP, and the left-wing Syriza party is losing support in the country. Recent polls show that if an election were called now, the Conservative opponents would win by over 10 points. But if Alexis Tsipras can persuade Greece's creditors to write off some of their debt, he will have achieved one of his government's biggest goals. Jack Parrock, Brussels.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you, Ollie Barrett. It's Monday and it is October 17th, 2016. My name is Richie Allen. Hope you've had a lovely weekend wherever you happen to be. It's been a busy old day today. Lots to get through. Big program. Tweet at Richie Allen Show. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Let's crack on.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Now, as usual, tweet at the program. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. You can email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Tell me what you're thinking. Lots coming up on the program. In the first hour, Vanessa Bates joins me. Now, Vanessa, she's been all over the mainstream news today, all over the tabloid newspapers. Vanessa's son Max Spears died in July in Poland. Now, a lot of people operating in the independent media know all about Max and who he was. He was a very well-respected conspiracy researcher. Vanessa believes he was murdered. Despite the suspicious circumstances surrounding his death, incredibly, no autopsy was performed. A lot of people believe that there is mounting evidence that Max Spears was killed by people who wish to silence him. Vanessa Bates joins us this hour. And in the second hour, Alfred Weber is back on the programme. It's been a long time since Alfred was on. He is a lawyer, a futurist, and he directed a proposed extraterrestrial communication study project for Jimmy Carter's administration way back in the 1970s. I know that Alfred Weber and those at Exopolitics have had a lot to say as well about the death of Max Spears, so we'll talk to him about that in the second hour as well. Good stuff. Right. It is a Monday, by the way, so following this programme, there is a brand new healing meditation from Kim Hutchison at livingasyoursoul.com. It's called How to Get Back into Your Love Pattern of Reality. That's a new series. It's a new series called How to Get Back into Your Love Pattern of Reality. The first one is tonight, and that is Your Channels of Illumination that follows me. We're broadcasting live on Alternate Current Radio, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, davidike.com, and the TuneIn app. So wherever you're listening, thanks for joining us this particular Monday. Busy old week ahead on the programme. So I'm going to crack right on looking at the time there. Now, I could talk to you about RT, the Russian television channel, having its accounts in Britain closed by NatWest Bank. That's a big story. We could talk about developments in Iraq, an offensive against ISIS in Iraq. There's so much we could get into in the monologue, but I'm going to leave it. I want to talk about something that's a direct follow-up to something we've been covering a lot on the programme recently. Now, if you were listening to the show last week, you would have heard me speaking with Yvonne and Peter Hollidge about their daughter Rebecca, and also Anna Cannon, who came back on the programme. She's the spokeswoman for regret.ie. Those mums and dads were on the programme on Thursday last to talk about their battle to raise awareness of what they feel is insurmountable evidence that the HPV Gardasil injection is causing harm to those who take it. It's a big story, not just in Ireland, in Europe, in Denmark, in Spain and elsewhere as well. Now, yesterday Sunday, News Talk, which is a national radio station, it's a national commercial station owned by Desmond O'Brien in Dublin, News Talk interviewed a guy called David Robert Grimes. Now, I've mentioned him a couple of times on the programme. He's an Oxford physicist. He was interviewed by News Talk's, I suppose you could say, celebrity doctor, a woman called Dr. Kira Kelly. Want to play you some of this, because we harp on, when I say we, those of us associated with this particular programme, harp on all the time about the need for the independent media and for a viable, robust and challenging independent media. So Kelly interviews, in inverted commas, David Robert Grimes, the Oxford-educated physicist, and first asks him, is the jury still out on the efficacy and the safety of the HPV injection?
From a medical and scientific perspective, absolutely not. The vaccine has been actually studied since the early 90s when it started being going through, like any drug, it went through lab development, testing, experimentation. It has been given somewhere in the region of 200 and 400 million doses have been given worldwide. And what we
200 to 400
million doses have been given worldwide. Now, there's a vaccine schedule you usually have to get to, but this is when you count them all together. We haven't seen any real adverse effects apart from what you would expect with any injection. You see some inflammation on the side of injection, mild flu-like symptoms are the worst adverse effects that we've actually recorded in this massive statistical cohort. So from a scientific perspective, what we know is the vaccine protects against cervical cancer and a host of other sexually transmitted cancers, and yet seems to have very little downside. However, that's not the impression you might get if you ventured onto social media and looked it up.
Those social media wags, Social media. He was straight on with the misdirection. He said 200 to 400 million doses. Well, which is it? I was thinking as I was listening to the interview, that's not like saying I have 5 or 6 close friends, is it? Maybe 10. I might have 12 close friends. 200 to 400 million. Which is it exactly? And then he acknowledged, because I suppose he felt he had to that every single dose is counted. He neglected to mention that girls until last year, until 2014 in fact, used to get 3 doses of it. Now it's 2 doses. Well, we haven't seen any real adverse effects. Just mild flu-like symptoms, said David Robert Grimes. So what does Merck say are the common side effects of this? And you might remember Peter Hollidge saying this on the programme last Thursday, the dad of the very brave young Rebecca. The side effects are not mild flu-like symptoms. Merck says itself that the common side effects include pain, swelling, redness, itching, bruising, bleeding, a lump, headache, fever, nausea, dizziness, tiredness, diarrhea, abdominal pain, sore throat, fainting, falling and hurting yourself, and so on, so on, so on. Some people might become stiff afterwards. So those are the common side effects. So could you say those are mild flu-like symptoms? No, I wouldn't have said that. Those are severe side effects, if indeed you develop those side effects. Right? Here's some more from the interview.
Almost 100 women in Ireland die of cervical cancer every year. Will this vaccine save those lives?
Absolutely. And this is the thing, but somewhere in the region of over 99% of all cervical cancers come from a HPV infection as the primary reason. So in theory, we can protect against all of that.
In theory, eh? I want to tell you this and I want you to listen carefully. She said, 100 women, she said. Let me tell you, dear listener, the last count was 95. 95 women a year die from cervical cancer. The last census that was taken in Ireland was in 2011. In 2011, there were 1,545,000 women aged between 15 and 64. Over 1.5 million women aged between 15 and 64. So let's just say 100 people die from it, 100 women in Ireland. Now 300 are diagnosed every year. 300 are diagnosed every year out of 1,545,000. 100 die from it. Not exactly an epidemic, is it, David? I mean, why vaccinate every girl? Why roll it out? Why run to a meeting with the World Health Organization when they beckon you with their index finger because they're concerned about the drop in the uptake? Why run? It's only 100 women. Do you know what the percentage of 100 women is, or 95 women out of 1,545,000? Do you want to know? It's 0.00614%. I'll say it again. 0.00614%. My God. The odds of you getting it are astronomical. Why insist that every girl in secondary school gets the doses? Well, you can probably guess why. And how long does cervical cancer take to develop anyway? Well, from the time that they find abnormalities on the cervix, it usually takes 10 to 20 years for the cancer to develop. Bet you didn't know that. I didn't. I had to look it up. And this is why we have the cervical smear test, which detects changes in the cells of the cervix, which might develop into cancer. Any half-decent doctor or nurse will take a sample of cells from the cervix using a small brush off to the lab then, and the lab will examine them for any abnormalities. Right? Are you getting the picture here? David Robert Grimes, what a man. The Oxford-educated physicist, I could give less of a shit where he was educated. Why the opposition, he's asked, why the opposition to the vaccine?
I think the answer to that is twofold. Now, the main opposition is some emerging over here, but for a long time, most of the opposition has been in the US. And one of the reasons is that parents simply don't like the idea of their children being sexually active. Now, you can't blame them for that, but also it's a reality that they should be willing to entertain and protect against and give them maximum protection. But there's a consequence of sex mantra that does affect a lot of people.
Wow. Reason one, parents don't like the idea of their children having sex, but it is a reality they need to entertain. Holy Jesus, he actually said that. Well, first and foremost there, Dr. Kira, one of the reasons why they don't like their children being vaccinated is because they don't like the idea their kids are having, well, sex. Dirty, filthy sex. But it's a reality that parents need to entertain. Do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to leave that one right there. Oxford-educated physicist writes for The Guardian. Wonderful. Any other reasons why people don't want to take up the vaccine?
But the other cohort is kind of an anti-vaccine mindset as well. It's not specific to the HPV vaccine. It affects, I mean, I'm sure your listeners can cast their mind back to the Wakefield days and when this used to affect Emma Moore. But there is an attitude that vaccination is viewed very, very skeptically. And people aren't sure why it's happening and they're afraid of it. And in that void, misinformation comes around. And you hear a story and someone says, oh, I heard someone got that and this happened. And before you can stop it, that rumour has spread around everywhere and the story is getting more and more details. But if you look at the science of it and the massive follow-up studies that have been done, they're simply not borne out in reality.
Mm. Misinformation, he says, on social media. Somebody says, I heard somebody got vaccinated and then this happened. It's anecdotal and it's without merit, he's trying to say. Okay then. Let's have some fun with that bullshit. Over 1,300 girls in Denmark have reported chronic fatigue, debilitating symptoms, weakness, loss of power of their limbs. Hundreds more in Spain. These are the ones we know of. Some character, this guy, isn't he? David Robert Grimes, eh? What a man. Trying to create the impression that one or two girls got a little bit unwell, and this has been taken up by the anti-vaxxers, the conspiracy theorists. What a liar. None of the women of Regret or any other woman in Denmark or in Spain has any interest in David Icke, in Michael Rivero, in Jim Mars, or in any presenter like me. They never heard of us. Lies. There might be several thousand cases across Europe. We don't know. But if you take the Danish figures and the Irish figures and the Spanish figures, well, what are you left with? You are left with an absolute rock-solid reason to investigate what's going on. Side effects, she says. Let's get back into the side effects. Listen to this.
The HIV is a nice one because actually the real side effects are quite minuscule. They're the same as the irritation side of injection and flu-like symptoms. I had a flu jab last week, had the exact same reaction.
Yeah,
that's
the
standard
too.
One. And these are minor things. They clear up in a day or two. But there's also, this is a bit of a risk balancing thing. What you're doing with this mild discomfort, which you might experience, is you are possibly staving off a very serious health consequence later on in life.
Yeah, possibly. Take a big risk with your health by getting two doses of this stuff, and you might possibly stave off. Wow. I got the flu jab, he said, and I had similar symptoms. We heard from, and we played the clip, I don't have it to hand, and there's no value in playing it again right now, the courageous young Rebecca Hollidge, who's been confined to a wheelchair. Eh? I've had similar symptoms. I had the flu jab. David Robert Grimes, this is the man who accused those parents in Ireland who want to find out why their daughters are sick. He accused them, well, he didn't accuse them of child abuse. He equated it with child abuse. Lovely man. Lovely man. Man of science. Thousands of children in Spain, in Denmark, in the Republic of Ireland, and I'm reliably informed in Japan, suffering grave illnesses. Not a little bit of a fever, or I've got a little bit of an itch or a bit of a rash. Seriously debilitating illnesses. Do I have to say it again? Pain, swelling, redness, itching, bruising, bleeding, nausea, dizziness, tiredness, diarrhea, abdominal pain, sore throat, fainting, falling down and hurting yourself, fatigue, Merck. That's what Merck says. And you know what, Dr. Kira Kelly, undoubtedly the worst presenter I've ever heard in my life, should have said to him, She should have said, well, I've read the side effects that have been listed by the manufacturer itself. David, could it be possible? Could it be possible that those side effects could be amplified? And rather than those side effects last for 1 or 2 or 3 days, maybe, they might have longer lasting effects, David. Eh? If she was a journalist of any note, she would have also asked him, why did you compare the regret parents to child abusers? But she didn't do that either. As for why was there no balance in the interview? Why didn't we have the other side? Well, this is the answer.
I don't have a second person in the studio quite deliberately this morning. Talk to me a little bit about the notion of false balance, David, because I think it's an important one.
It really is an important one, and I'm very appreciative that you took that measure. So there is a mindset, and it's a well-meaning one because it comes from journalistic impartiality, the idea that every viewpoint should have a counter viewpoint, and that you assign them roughly equal weight at the beginning. So I'm here, we're talking this, and we're roughly in agreement on this. So there's an argument that some people say, well, we should have someone who's anti the vaccine on as well for balance. But the problem with balance in scientific issues is it absolutely falls apart if all of the evidence is on one side. So it happens with climate change is another example where the scientific consensus is overwhelming and the evidence is all on one side. Yet you'll often see shows where they put someone on and they put a counter on who doesn't believe in climate change because someone in their head thinks that's a balance. It's a false balance because it doesn't represent the actual breakdown of evidence.
So the audience is stupid, according to David Robert Grimes. They can't be trusted to understand the difference between a genuine cogent argument made by a researcher and Mad Bob down the road who says the earth is flat. That's why we don't do any balance, because the evidence is overwhelmingly on our side. Incidentally, the last time I looked, and I've been doing programmes like this for a few years now, there are 200 to 300 doctors and healthcare workers, system people, establishment people who are asking questions about vaccines. So David Robert Grimes is a pathetic, miserable, pathological liar because he knows this. But he gives the impression, and he's aided and abetted by the hapless, worthless, useless Kira Kelly, that there are no qualified or reasonable people asking questions. He knows damn well that CDC psychologist William Thompson has gone on the record to say, you know what, when we were looking into these things, we buried a study that showed African-American boys might show autistic tendencies. That is after receiving the MMR jab. Gonna leave that there. That is your media, and that is why, thankfully now, thousands of us, thousands of men and women, spend every second of our day, apart from when we're sleeping, maybe we do when we're sleeping as well, working on programmes like this to give you the other side. And you know what sets us apart from the disgusting news talk in Dublin and RTE and the BBC and all the rest of it? What sets us aside is we invite these people on. And we invite them on under no pretense. We invite them on and say you will have absolute respect and will be treated properly on this programme. Please come and debate with us, but they never do. In case you're wondering, Richie, why don't we hear from these people? They are asked time and time and time again, but they won't come on. Going to take a quick break. Back with plenty more in a minute. You're with the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. LivingAsYourSoul.com, making the profound practical.
Alrighty, welcome back. It's Monday's Richie Allen Show, October 17th, 2016. Our first guest is standing by. It's Vanessa Bates. You don't want to miss this. We're going to be talking about Max Spears, whom Vanessa and many other people believe was murdered in Poland in July. This is serious stuff. Welcome to the show, back after The Cure. Music from The Cure and In Between Days on The Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. The time is exactly 27 minutes past the hour. Now, a few months ago, I received a connection request on Facebook from Max Spears. When I got it, I was happy because I'd been contacted by a couple of listeners to the programme who'd said to me, "Yeah, Richie, you might want to get Max Spears on the programme. He's doing a lot of very interesting work and investigations around the field of the fields, even of UFOs and ufology, and he's getting some answers and he's putting it together quite well." So I connected with Max, only very, very briefly spoke to him, and he said that he'd be interested in coming on the program in the very, very near future, and that he was going off on speaking engagements and he was travelling in Europe and that he loved to connect with us. So I said, "Of course, we'd be delighted to have you." Well, I never knew Max before that and I wouldn't get a chance to connect with him because he died in very mysterious circumstances in Warsaw back in July. Now today, the big British tabloid newspapers, the Daily Mail and the Mirror and others are running a story, and the story features Max's mum, Vanessa, who's saying that she believes that his work, the work he was doing, might very well be connected to his death. I can't imagine how difficult a time it is for Vanessa. I really can't, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart, but I'm glad that she's agreed to come on the programme and chat with us tonight. So let's welcome Vanessa to the show. Vanessa, thanks so much for taking the call. You're very
Hi.
Welcome. Listen, I won't belabour the point about things being difficult for you, but it's only been a few months, and I can tell you sincerely that since we announced on social media today, a number of people who followed Max's work through Facebook and through his website and who don't know you personally, Vanessa, have been on to say really lovely things and to wish you all the best, and they want to know that you're doing okay.
That's great. That's nice to hear, because after some of the comments that I saw, it's not a world I'm used to, and some of the comments on the online versions of the newspapers were not all quite so supportive, so I've got to toughen up a bit, I guess.
I don't know about that. I'm always surprised when somebody passes away that they don't close down the comment section on the newspaper. It's okay when it's about sport or about music. I don't mean about death now, but I mean if it's about a football game or something, you can understand it. But they must understand that it's a sensitive time. They should close those comment sections, Vanessa. Ignore them.
Yes.
I mean, they're low life. Anybody who would say anything like that. I meant what I said. I mentioned to you today, Max had gotten in touch. I didn't know him, but I knew of him. And I'd heard nice things about his work. And he would have been coming on the programme at some stage to chat to us, because we're very interested in people like him. And then he died. What happened, Vanessa? What do you know about what happened?
I don't know very much at all. That's half of the problem, or more than half. It's the main problem, really, is that he went to Poland to do a interview, and did that. It was successful. The Polish seemed to really like him, so he stayed on there a little bit longer, started to chat with some of the people who were involved in the field that he was interested in, and then stayed with a lady who was involved, you know, in the same field. And then I'd been out one evening and got in. It was a bad area here in the country. In England, you get lots of places where there's no good reception. Got in, there was lots of messages I hadn't been able to pick up, but one of the messages just simply said, Max has died. That was how I found out about it. That was Max's girlfriend at the time, whose name was Sarah. And from that on then, the whole nightmare began. It was a question of tracing it through. And since then, I've felt like Sherlock Holmes, really, trying to trace. And the roads lead all over the place to places that I never, ever thought that I would go to. And it's a very mysterious and frightening world that I've stepped into.
Now, Vanessa, when a British person dies overseas, I understand there's a procedure, isn't there, that needs to be followed. I believe the Home Office will always get involved, and they will do, well, we're led to believe anyway that, and I don't want to criticise them, because I don't know anything about, you know, this, but they're supposed to be there for the family, to help them with the horrible reality of getting somebody back home, and I suppose finding out what it is that happened to them.
Right.
So what did the Home Office say to you? Did they contact you at any stage?
No, I contacted them. I contacted it's the Foreign Office here and in Poland. Basically, the advice was, you know, if you want to get him back home, then they told me, you know, how to do that, what pieces of paper were needed, which is actually very little. And since then, I have heard really not from from anybody at all, anybody British or Polish. I've been dealing with it all on my own. I really have.
You've been left to do it by yourself, have you?
Yes, absolutely. I wrote to my local MP, who is Julian Brazier, who is a Kent MP. Somehow or the other, and that this is probably me, it went to John Brazier, who is apparently his son, who works out of a, I'm not even sure if it's the same office, but they work very closely together. And I believe I sent my email to the wrong office. So I hadn't heard anything. But about 3 days ago, I did get a lovely letter from him saying that he had contacted a chief constable to do with the police, but also, most importantly, that I haven't had an autopsy result since Max arrived in England a week after he had died. And he died on June the 16th.
July the 16th. So, and thanks for correcting me, of course. My brain froze. It is, of course, the Foreign Office. So,
that's right.
He was declared dead in Poland. What did they say happened to him? The newspapers, of course, newspapers being newspapers, they say that the Polish medical people said he died of natural causes. Did they elaborate on that?
No. I have the piece of paper that the doctor was called to the house where Max was at 6:15 p.m. on the night of Saturday the 16th of July. And it's a little list of, what was his temperature, what was his skin colour, what were his pupils doing, etc. And then a little note, handwritten, saying death by natural causes. And that's what I have from the doctor.
He was about the same age as me when he died.
Yeah, and there you go.
He was
very young then.
Yeah, and a lot fitter than me, in much better shape than me. And he wasn't. No, he was. I'm not just saying that for a laugh. I mean, I try and keep fit, but I certainly wasn't in the shape that Max was in. And he wasn't. He hadn't been ill, so he hadn't. He hadn't been ill at all, Vanessa.
He had not been well for a day or two before. He'd been on holiday, would you believe it, to Cyprus. And towards the end of that holiday, he said he'd been having some headaches. Then he came back to Poland. We're now talking about the 12th of July. And he said he's running a bit of a temperature. So I said, have you seen a doctor? He said, I've got some antibiotics, but I'm feeling a lot better. He said, if it hasn't gone by Monday, I'll go back to the doctor. But he was okay. And prior to going and everything, there was nothing wrong. I mean, he's kind of sort of super fit, really. He's one of those that runs 5 miles a day and eats.
He was in generally very good condition.
All that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was nothing wrong with him at all. Nothing wrong with him at all.
What's very disturbing, of course, is, and I know you're going to tell us in a couple of minutes' time, you're going to tell us the sorts of things that Max was interested in and the sorts of things he was investigating. Before we talk about that, he sent you a text a couple of days before he died, and he was fairly explicit in the text about being worried about something. What was the text exactly?
Your boy... Hold on, I'll get it.
You have it on the phone still.
Your boy is... Yeah, it's just... Yeah, it's clear to me. It's just everything has been... Today, it's like everything's hit the press today, and I have been very overwhelmed because it's kind of brought the... reality of this whole thing very much to the front of my mind, which I've been kind of avoiding, I think. But it says your boy's in trouble. If anything happens, make sure you investigate. That's what it says.
Your boy is in trouble, and if anything happens, make sure you investigate.
Yeah, yeah.
And Max, had he ever said anything like that before, Vanessa?
He had not. He had not. But it's not the same kind of shock to hear that perhaps a regular mum with a regular son would hear. I have to say that.
Do you know the reason I asked that question? Asked that because I've chatted with one or two people whom frequented Max's website and who might not have known Max personally, but they followed his work. And Max wasn't one of those talking nonsense, saying that, people are out to get me and people are out to kill me. He didn't have that paranoia at all about him. So... When he said this, it was serious because it wasn't something he would say regularly. In fact, at all.
Never. Never, ever, ever, ever said it before. The reason I was qualifying it is because I knew and he knew that when you work in the world that he works in with people who are, there's a lot of pedophilia, there's a lot of strange behaviours, then I always think you're walking in a dangerous world. So that's where I say I could believe there could be danger. But no, not a dramatist at all. Never said anything
never,
like that.
Never a thing. Before. Now, did you ask him to elaborate? I'm sure you did. I'm sure you said, look after yourself or what's going on. And if you did, what did he say?
He said, it's the people that I'm working with, the world that I'm travelling in, Mum. And he said, I'm sick of keeping my mouth shut, keeping names out of, I'm constantly being told, say what you think, but don't name names. You'll get in trouble. And he was kind of reaching a point where he felt like if you don't start naming some names, your work is a waste of time.
Just going to remind our listeners, it's 20 minutes to the top of the hour. Vanessa Bates is on the line from Canterbury. Vanessa's son, Max Spears, was well known in research circles, particularly in the fields of ufology and communication and contact and other areas as well that he was looking into, elite paedophilia and satanic ritual abuse. He was going to be, he was due to come on this programme sometime in the late summer, early autumn. I didn't know him personally. He connected to us on Facebook. We'd heard very good things about the work he was doing. And if you just joined in the programme, in mid-July, perfectly healthy Max had left his mum Vanessa know that he was very worried about his safety. And a couple of days later, he was found dead in Warsaw. And there was no autopsy performed. He was basically declared dead of natural causes. Do you want to elaborate, Vanessa, a little bit more on what you knew about the work that he did, what he was into?
Oh, it's very difficult to explain the work. I think those that know about this field will understand. The best I can understand, because it's not me, it's him. All of this is his belief system. But a lot of it I could follow and make sense of. But I think, funnily enough, we went to see, when we were in LA, Max persuaded me to go and see David Icke do a show. He was doing like a 2 or 3 day conference, and we went, and that was kind of right the beginning of my understanding of his sense of the injustices and the hidden world in which we live. So it's really about that, about what goes on, what money can buy, the kind of disgusting things that go on behind the scenes with people who can afford to buy the silence. A lot of Max's work was to do with the exposing people who were using children in particular. That was his particular interest, I think, but it spread, you know, spread over many, many areas.
And it's very difficult to talk about that, isn't it? It's very difficult to speculate as to what he might have, you know, uncovered or whom he might have been about to mention, because we just don't know. I'm really troubled, A, by the Polish authorities not doing an autopsy and the Foreign Office not requesting that. Now, when Max's body was repatriated, Vanessa, has there been, or was there an autopsy here?
As soon as he arrived back here, the day he arrived, I was sitting in the funeral home just down the road from me here in Canterbury. And, you know, as life is, Max had just arrived from the 4 day journey from Poland by, you know, a car with a coffin, sealed lead coffin, is what they told me. And I requested that he didn't even stop at the funeral home, but that he went to the Queen Elizabeth Hospital and that there was an autopsy immediately. And I said, I am suspicious of this death, obviously. So they were great, and they took him straight there. He didn't even stop. He just went straight to the hospital, and the autopsy was, as far as I was told, begun. And the absolute truth since then is that there hasn't been a word. And when I call, I'm told that this is normal. This is the length of time it takes. So we're now 3 months ago Max died. So I guess there's nothing that I can say other than I have no power. I have no power at all. I'm sure I'm getting irritating the number of times that I call. I have a really good solicitor who's working with me, who's calling and chasing it. But in
well,
the
I'll
end,
tell you
we
what.
Have no power.
I tell you what, Vanessa, to hell with them getting annoyed about you becoming irritating. Look, I don't know exactly how things work, but I'm guessing that it's a hell of a long time to have to wait for the result of an autopsy. That's a long time. And those people who carry out these things, their first responsibility is to his mum. Their first responsibility is to you. And they should be thinking, we need to expedite the results of this for his mother, because it's obviously a terrible time for her.
Yeah.
And has anybody given you any inclination as to when you might get any results? Anything?
Just that it takes a long time. It really has been absolutely dreadful. I asked, one of the very weird things, that there's twists and turns that are absolutely unbelievable. One of them is I have a photograph of Max 2 hours after he died that the lady who he was living in the house with sent me. And he's got a seriously big red mark on his forehead, absolutely fresh mark, probably 3 inches by an inch. So for the doctor to write natural causes, just looking at that on his face, and sadly I have that picture.
And I can, I can understand. I'm going to get a flood of people now, not that they're insensitive, but they don't think, and they're going to be asking, is the picture available? No, it isn't available. Right. And maybe in the future, Vanessa might make it available, but it's not available now, and it's not going to be.
No, but I have given it to the coroner. They have it.
You know, if the police, ambulance, I'm sure the police turned up as well in Poland. Of course they would. A British citizen is found deceased in an apartment. Surely they're going to turn up. You look at a wound on his head, and you immediately suspect that something is wrong, don't you? So you order an autopsy, right? That's what should happen, logically. Yeah. Nothing. No autopsy. He died of natural causes.
Yeah.
Case closed.
And in fact, what happened was even more extraordinary, which is that the lady who was seemingly really kind, you know, I know she's listening to these and I'm sure that she's horrified, but I'm sorry, it's got to be out there. I can't bear it anymore. The doctor called the police to come out to the house because she wouldn't let the doctor leave the house because she wanted Max brought back to life. So she was in this terrible distress state for whatever reason. Anyway, the police came out. Police allowed a doctor to leave, and then police left. So police leave, doctor leaves, Max remains in-house and does not leave until 11 o'clock the next day. And why that or how that, don't ask me, because I don't know.
You know, if these were decent times and things were done properly, the British Foreign Office would be asking, well, they'd be demanding answers to those questions, wouldn't they? They'd be saying,
I would think,
what's going on here, you know?
Yeah.
And the people he was working with in Poland, and I know he spoke at a conference and there were some very interesting people there, people we know, good people, some of them that we know, others we don't know. I'm sure they're good people as well. They've obviously been in touch to express their condolences, I guess, Vanessa, but have any of them given you any clues? Is there anything at all suspicious, anything out of the way or out of place in the days leading up to his death? Anything at all?
Only that he had not been feeling well, and Monica, whose name is all over the internet, so, you know, it's fine to say her name, I am sure, had been looking after him. He hadn't felt well. She said that on the morning of the day he died, now this is her talking to me, she said he threw up about 2 litres of black fluid. That was directly from her mouth, I heard. Said it to me.
Let me get this out of the way now. You're talking to an Irishman, and I like the odd binge, right? And I'm not being silly. Yeah. I don't want to sound unsentimental. I'm not. I like the odd binge. And once in a blue moon, for me sins, I'll have a bad night and I might vomit. He wasn't that type of kid, so he wasn't. He wasn't the type to go out and get absolutely rat-arsed.
No. Certainly he's had his times when he's been drunk, no question about it.
But not like
was
that.
Was this to do with drinking? No. This was like this black fluid. She said it was a very dark black, and she said the stains are still on my carpet. So I don't know what that was, but he was lying, I think, on the sofa and in the bed most of the day. She was keeping an eye on him and getting on with what she had to do and just keeping an eye on him. And then she says she looked over and saw it didn't look like he was breathing. And that's when she called the doctor. And that's when apparently the doctor, you know, came. And that's where I have the piece of paper that says he came at 6:15 and he was declared dead. He clearly was dead. If you read the piece of paper, it's very apparent there was no life in him at all.
Vanessa Bates is on the line. Vanessa, look, thanks for coming on. We have a couple more questions for you. We won't keep you too much longer.
No, that's fine.
Another 5 or 6 minutes. And thanks for talking to the papers about it, because it's important. You know, he was a young, healthy, good-looking, bright man with a lot going for him. And he was investigating things, and he was interested in these things.
Yeah.
And his death is rotten, and it's suspicious. And I'm not going to make any suggestions. I don't know what happened to him, but
nope.
I can't, absolutely cannot stand over the Polish authorities not demanding an investigation.
Nope.
You suspect, I suppose, is it fair to say that because of what he was doing and because of what you heard and because of the text, you suspect maybe foul play, and if the vomiting, and I think the vomiting is very significant, maybe he was poisoned, Vanessa.
Maybe he was poisoned. And what's frightened me the most, which was yesterday, was probably the worst day that I've had in many years, because I got a letter through from the Polish government which said that if I didn't come up with the results of the autopsy within 6 days, they were closing the case. That would be it. It would be finished. This is from Poland. Obviously, I have no control over the autopsy, but they say they're going to close it. And the only way to get an extension is to come up with £1,000 to extend it. And so I've got that hanging over my head as well. Why they didn't demand a autopsy, I don't know. In this country, that would be standard. My mother's 92. They insisted on an autopsy when she died. God knows why. She broke her hip. But, you know, we kind of just do autopsies. But no, not with Max. He just was shipped back home.
It's interesting about your mother. That sounds proper and thorough. You know, they might want to find out, you know, has anybody maybe given her a push, or has she been under any duress? I like that.
Right.
Of course, she wasn't, of course.
Right.
But you know, somebody was looking out for her. So who's looking out for Max?
Well, that's it. Nobody.
Tell us about, you have a funding thing set up, and I want to plug the hell out of this.
I've
you need some money, don't you?
Off. To be honest, I've taken it down because there were some comments in the papers about the fact that I was trying to make money out of Max's death. And I thought, oh, sod that. Forget it. So that's not there anymore. I can't have that.
No, but hang on a second, Vanessa.
Be looking at it.
It's not for me to tell you, because I don't know you personally. But listen,
no.
To hell with any bastard who writes something about you're making money off his death. That's absolute nonsense. If you need financial assistance in order to take this further legally, you don't be one bit embarrassed about asking for that. And just don't read that nonsense. A famous football manager was asked years ago about, I get a lot of criticism when I read about my performances. And the manager said, don't read it then. And I would say the same to you, don't read that nonsense.
That's right. And I think you're right. I think that's the way to go. I have to stop doing that. But that's what I've done, because I don't need to say any more about it. That's it. Somehow or the other, I've got to come up with this £1,000. And one way or the other, I suspect that...
When do you need the £1,000, boy, Vanessa?
What's that?
When do you need the £1,000, boy?
They give me a week.
Listen,
a week before they do the extension.
Get a GoFundMe page or some sort of other funding page set up.
Well, that's what I had, but then that's the thing I closed down. But, you know, maybe now I'm listening to you, maybe I'll bang it back up.
I'll bang it back up and send us the details straight away. I'm sure.
All right.
I'm sure David Eichel is very, very interested in this. Will happily advertise that funding on his website. And let people know about it. And I think you'll get that £1,000 in a few days. Look, I don't know what to say to you. It's obviously a horrible time, Vanessa.
It's fine. It's all right.
I think a very grave wrong has been committed. And the Polish authorities were wrong. The Foreign Office is wrong. Whoever performed the autopsy on Max, and Max has been buried, hasn't he? He has been laid to rest.
Yes, he has.
So the results are there. And the fact they're not giving you these results is a disgrace.
Yeah.
And somebody needs to be petitioned or lobbied or hammered with a mailing campaign to say this is unacceptable. This lady deserves to know what the autopsy results say.
Yeah, it's very difficult when they say to you, you know, these things take time. You feel, you suddenly realize what a nightmare world we live in, because all we can say is, oh, okay, we're powerless. But you know, unless we get people backing us, which is where these kind of things help.
We're not powerless. We're not powerless because we're people like you and people like me, people who actually give a damn about people. There are far more of us than there are of them. I really believe that.
That's true. You're right. You're right.
Look after yourself. Put that page
Thank
up
you.
And get in touch with us straight away. And we'll spread it across as far as we can. You've got a lot of friends. There are people who work at Basis Project. There are people who work at Project Camelot. They're very fond of you. And they were very fond of Max. And they will support that program. Excuse me, that funding campaign. And you'll get that money, I guarantee you.
All right, then. Perhaps I'll get the courage to do it. Get it going again.
And don't read the newspapers. Ignore them.
All right. That's the advice from tonight. I won't look anymore.
Listen, you got guts. I'm sure, Max, I'm sure it's to my absolute loss that I didn't get to meet Max. I think he would have been somebody to know. Thanks.
Yeah, he's a lovely boy.
Vanessa, look after yourself. Thanks for coming
on. You too. Thank you. Bye-bye for now.
Bye for now. Vanessa Bates on the line to us there from Canterbury, talking about her son, Max Spears, whom was looking into a lot of things. He was looking into paedophilia, satanic ritual abuse. He was looking into certain individuals, and his friends and his mother are certain that his death was, well, it was, to say the least, suspicious, and the circumstances around it were incredibly suspicious. I hope she does get the funding campaign up again very quickly, because if she does that, I have no doubt in my mind, within 24 hours, she'll get the £1,000 that she needs. I know people listening to this programme will make a donation to her, and I know because Max worked with the Basis Project, which I had a brief connection with at the People's Voice in London. I think Miles Johnson is the guy who heads that up, and Project Camelot and Kerry Cassidy. Between all of us, if we promote it, I'm sure she'll get the £1,000. Thanks for all the kind words that came in there for Vanessa. I'll take some screenshots of them and I'll send them on to her. That was Vanessa Bates, and you heard her on Monday's edition of the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. Tell you what I am going to do. I might take news because I didn't do much news. I was so keen to talk before speaking with Vanessa about the vaccine HPV situation in Ireland that there wasn't an awful lot of news, was there, for me today, as there ordinarily would be. So we will take news. Just want to mention that Alfred Weber from Exopolitics is on in a few minutes' time. Now, Alfred undoubtedly will have an opinion on what happened to Max Spears, because I know that he's blogged about it, and I know that he's put stuff on Facebook about it as well. Alrighty then. I've not even got some music lined up. I was so wrapped up in listening to Vanessa, I've not even got music lined up. But there you go, I've got some now. I have. Right, this is Aslan. A song called This Is on Your Richie Allen Show on alternatecurrentradio.com, davidicke.com, the TuneIn app, my own website, and so on. Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm not going to take news. To hell with news. I'll give you the headlines when I come back, and then it'll be Alfred Weber. Stay with the programme. Good to be with you. the genius of Christy Dignam and Aslan. This is on the Richie Allen Show, exactly 3 minutes past the hour. Decided to forego the news there to give us more time with our next guest, who's coming up in a minute. Going to get him on after these messages. Stay with the Richie Allen Show, back in two.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Welcome back to the programme. It's Monday's edition of the Richie Allen Show. It's October 17th, 2016. Thanks for all the tweets that came in there for Vanessa Bates. I've just reminded Vanessa that if she does choose to put that crowdfunding campaign back online, that a number of us with, you know, reasonable profiles in the independent media, and of course David's profile is beyond reasonable. David is so big worldwide, of course, that we will, you know, endeavour to secure the £1,000 that she needs to send to the Polish authorities. Now, it's exactly 6 minutes past the hour. Let's welcome our next guest to the programme. His website, I love reading his website. It's exopolitics.com. That's exopolitics.com. That's where you'll find out all about him, all you need to know about him. He's a lawyer, a futurist, and amongst other things, he directed a proposed extraterrestrial communication study project for the Jimmy Carter administration. Fascinating man. He's got a book coming out in early 2017, which we'll talk about as well. And he's going to be speaking, he's going to be on a number, or doing a number of speaking engagements real soon, including in Europe. And we'll talk to him about those engagements as well. It's about time that we welcomed Alfred Weber back to the programme. Alfred, so great to have you back on. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, you know, I'm very, very happy to be here. And at this crucial time, I think that the transition between 2016, which is kind of the end of one book, and 2017, which is opening a new chapter, I believe, is a very exciting one. So I'm very happy to be here to share with your listeners some of the good things that are going to start coming along.
Brilliant stuff. I must point out, too, you were due to be on the programme a couple of months back, but I was taken ill and I had some time off, which was a shame. But you're here now. I want to mention, Alfred, now, I hope I'm not catching you on the hop, and if I am, I'll take responsibility. I probably should have dropped you a text message, but just before you came on, Vanessa Bates was on the programme. Vanessa is Max Spears' mother.
Max, sure.
Now, I know that, because I check Exopolitics, and I'm on your Facebook page as well, and I know that you took an interest in what happened to Max. Max died in Warsaw in July, suspiciously. His mother, Vanessa, believes there's, you know, there are a lot of unanswered questions. What do you know about that story? I know you knew about Max.
Well, I just want to say, first of all, thank you for bringing up Max, and I want to honor him and his work and his courage. Now, I was just informed by one of my very good correspondents that among the 13 to 15,000 emails that have been released through WikiLeaks, and it should be noticed that Julian Assange internet access was cut within the last few hours by a state actor. We have gotten that information. By a state actor, they mean a government. It could be the U.S. because he's releasing information on John Podesta, who was chief of staff both to Obama and to Hillary Clinton. With regard to Max Spears, what I learned was that Max Spears indicated that he had information that was very damaging to Hillary Clinton, and that he was going to be releasing that shortly. And within 2 days, he was dead. And I just learned that a few hours before airtime.
Now tell us, Alfred, who did he let in on the fact that he might have very damaging information to Hillary? Who did he tell this to?
Yeah. This is all breaking
it's
so much.
It's all hot, yeah, because I only ask because it might be somebody that Vanessa Bates, Max's mother, might want to communicate with.
Sure. This is I'm just going to the thread here, and the thread.
Yeah, I've caught you on the hop there. My apologies. You can't take your time. There's no rush. There's no rush whatsoever now.
Please just bear with me.
Yeah, take your time. There's no rush whatsoever. I'm going to just mention, while you're looking for that information, I'm going to mention that Alfred's books on exopolitics and the omniverse and all these articles are available at the website exopolitics.com, which I'm going to tweet a link to straight away, and we'll put it on Facebook as well. I brought up Max Spears with Alfred because I'd seen that he'd been talking about him on Facebook and on his own website. And I know that people involved with exopolitics around the world are new Max and are very interested in his work. And Alfred has said that somebody has claimed that Max communicated to them that he had some information that would not be very good for Hillary Clinton. Go ahead.
Okay. And I'd be glad to share with you off air, to share with Max's mother the name of the correspondent who I know well, so that she can get in touch with her. But I will read her post, because I've been back and forth with my Facebook profile all morning with regard to the Daily Mail's article on Max Spears. So here is what my correspondent writes. As revealed in WikiLeaks, Spears also had a correspondence with John Podesta. John Podesta was chief of staff of Barack Obama and is now campaign chairperson of Hillary Clinton, who had confided to him. Spears had confided to John Podesta some, quote, world takeover plans, end of quote, by Hillary Clinton and others. Spears said he was going to reveal it within 2 days. I imagine this is his correspondence with John Podesta. I'm thinking that is what got him, Spears, killed. And I said, that is very interesting. Is he linked to that email? And then she says, okay. And so then she says, I got it from Saoirse Fall. As long as one considers the possible misdirect factor, my best understanding is that this is a rogue CIA White Hat faction website. The intel is usually pretty good there. And then it goes on here to an October 17, 2016 article that says Russia names Hillary Clinton as murder suspect in death of top UFO researchers. In other words, that there's a school of thought. There's one of Hillary Clinton's nicknames, as you know, is Killery, and that the Clinton machine, the Clinton political machine, is running a death, a murder ink, to rub out political enemies. And Russia names Hillary Clinton as murder suspect in the death of top UFO suspects. And so in here, the Podesta group is named. And in the email, Max Spears and Gaurav Tewart are two of the assassinated UFO researchers who are named as targets of the Hillary Clinton murder ring. Now, this is top-notch conspiracy. I must tell you, as a former director of the Assassination Information Bureau, who was sought out by Representative Henry B. Gonzalez to be a consultant to his House Select Committee on Assassinations, investigating the assassination of John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, and Malcolm X, that I do not trust the source, Sorcha Fall. However, the theory put out in this article, which I have the link to, which I'd be happy to send you, is that Max Spears was caught up in the Hillary Clinton dragnet. And I can verify, because my meetings with Governor Winthrop Rockefeller of the Rockefeller Group, who were the Clinton sponsors in Arkansas, go back to 1966, when I met with Governor Winthrop Rockefeller in the faculty lounge of the Yale Law School, and he literally gang-stalked me because they had time-traveled my Exopolitics book back to 1971, which the Rockefeller brothers were the corporate sponsor of and the beneficiary of that CIA DARPA time travel project. They identified all the future literature and UFO researchers and brought back my book, and they identified all the future presidents and then made sure that they were indoctrinated into the Rockefeller fold, like Bush 1, Clinton, Bush 2, Obama, and now the fight is between Trump and Clinton 2. And then Bill and Hillary, who were the CIA couple, and entered Yale Law School a couple of years later in 1971. I left in 1967, but Governor Winthrop Rockefeller, they sent the Rockefeller brothers to different parts of the U.S. to settle, and that's how they ran the U.S., kind of as a fiefdom. So they sent Winthrop Rockefeller to do gang stalking on me in 1966, informed by their time travel, because they already had my book, Exopolitics, that they had time traveled back.
I must mention, by the way, in case my listeners are expecting me to jump in there, Alfred has been on the program a couple of times. In fact, about three times over the last 2 years. And there's a very interesting interview or conversation between Alfred and myself going back about a year and a half ago, where Alfred talks about time travel technology and how it came into being and who uses it and for what for. And that's what he's talking about when he talks about his book Exopolitics being taken back to the early 1970s. If you want to hear that, go to youtube.com to our channel and just look for Alfred Weber on our channel. You'll get the interview, but if you're on exopolitics.com, you'll get all that information anyway. It's important and it's very, very, very interesting. I find it, and I found it absolutely fascinating. Can I just ask you this about about sure. about the information, Alfred, about Max Spears and Hillary Clinton. Isn't it not only likely, but maybe even highly likely, that this is something put out there to throw people away from what Max maybe was really onto?
It could very well be.
Yeah.
It could very well be. Here's a possible smoke. You know, where they say that there's smoke, there is fire. Max Spears was a super soldier. And what Hillary Clinton represents is she's the front, and what the Clintons, Bill and Hillary Clinton, represent is that they're the front people for the owners of the secret space program. And the Rockefeller Rothschild are partially the owners of the secret space program, which is headquartered, it's nestled within banks, it's nestled within the U.S. government, it's nestled within off-planet fleets that are based in Antarctica, that are based on the moon, and that are based on Mars, and that have off-planet production facilities, and that colleagues of mine have written books about, like Dr. Michael Sala. Now, what's at stake in this election is that Hillary Clinton wants to do a false UFO disclosure, and if she's elected, take the press to Area 51 and show a few alien bodies and show some, you know, quote, captured UFOs that are either back-engineered UFOs that the U.S. has either captured or reconstructed back in the late 1940s. But Hillary Clinton's job, if she's elected president, will be to continue what Barack Obama has done, which is to keep the secret space program just that, secret, which is where the, I would call it a multinational breakaway civilization, is already active in space. Some people estimate that they have taken 40 to 60 million citizens of Earth, professionals mainly, out into production facilities.
On Mars now we're talking about, right? Maybe
yeah,
Mars.
Yeah.
Now, so yep. this is brilliant stuff. So what's Obama? Obama comes out last week and he says, right, within 20 to 30 years, we'll have people on Mars. So, you know, for most people who just get their news through the Daily Blah or the Daily Nonsense, Alfred, to them, that just came out of the blue. But it's not coming out of the blue, right? There's something else going on here. He's, you know, him talking about Mars is just not out of the blue. What's going on?
Yeah, well, both Barack Obama and his successor, which the permanent war economy is working really hard to make sure that Hillary Clinton is Barack Obama's successor. And their job is to keep the citizens of planet Earth in quarantine such that the secret space program, which is run by the Matrix trillionaires, or, you know, their wealth is beyond measure. And we here on Earth are subject to a depopulation program. I guess that they want to take us down to what the Georgia Guidestone says, which is the ideal population on Earth is 500 million, and we're up to 7 billion now. So, either they're bringing in, either Barack Obama was supposed to be our executioner, as Bill Clinton said when he introduced Barack Obama to the American people, and he wants to try and start a thermonuclear war with Russia before he leaves, and or they're going to continue the depopulation and the program of keeping the secret space program secret, and even having a false flag alien invasion when Hillary Clinton is elected president, if that happens.
Well, a great friend of mine, and somebody whom you know, he shares your opinion about a false flag alien invasion, and that's Jim Mars. Jim has been talking about that to me on air and privately for a number of years. Could I just want to pick you up on something, Alfred, which is really interesting. So we've come to believe that the elite, and we have so many different names for them, they want to reduce the population of this planet by you could say 7 or 8 tenths. They want to bring it down to about 500 million, right? Something like that.
Right.
If they do that, and if they think they're going to succeed, and like you, I believe that the hidden hand is definitely pushing civilization to a global conflict that will involve nuclear weapons. Now, I don't think they're going to succeed, but I think that's what they want to do. If they think they're going to succeed, why are they trying to terraform Mars? What's Mars all about?
Well, Mars right now is it's like acting almost like what I would call the 51st state, and that is that the International War Crimes Racketeering Organization that has taken illegitimate control of Earth under international and under cosmic law. They did it by force and deception, has now moved to the moon and Mars as its corporate headquarters. And so they're terraforming that as a planet for factory production, for slave labor, factory production and mining and export outside of the solar system to other civilizations in and outside of the galaxy on a barter basis in return for good services and wealth. And so there's a whole intergalactic economy going on that's solely benefiting the oligarchs and the matrix control of the breakaway civilization, and which earthling humanity are virtual slaves. And those 40 to 60 million of earthling humanity who either were duped or abducted to go out and work in the Mars and other slave labor camps. And people can go to exopolitics.com and newsinsideout.com, where we've documented these. We have documented cases of slave labor camps on Mars that are documented by photographs, by military-trained remote viewers.
And it's 60 million, sorry to interrupt you, it's 60 million people, you reckon?
That is one of the estimates, 40
to 60
million.
That's an enormous amount, isn't it? I mean, that's a lot of missing people, right?
Part of the PSYOP in the UK a number of years ago, whereby they hid it away from public perception, is that they created TV shows with titles like Life on Mars, so that the public would say, oh yeah, that's just a cop show. And so it wouldn't occur to the police, I mean, to the public at large, that engineers and families and et cetera are being recruited to go and work at secret facilities on Mars under false pretenses.
And then they never come back.
Yeah, and they're virtually slave labor there.
Can I just acknowledge one thing? Now, you know that I love listening to you and that I find this very interesting. I'm very open-minded. I don't know what I believe and what I don't believe. I'm still kind of on my own journey. But I believe in your sincerity. This is why I like speaking with you, Alfred. And I read Exopolitics and found it incredibly interesting. Difficult for a guy like me to understand, but very interesting. I just want to acknowledge that we have had one or two tweets from people who say that they just don't buy this. I'm just not buying this at all. I'm not going to read them out individually, but I just want to acknowledge them. We've had plenty of tweets from people whom are really interested in this. They follow Alfred's work. They follow the previously mentioned bases and Project Camelot and are very interested in it. But I'm just acknowledging that there are some people who say, just not buying this at all. Alfred is barking up the wrong tree, one or two people are saying. Alfred, you know what our mutual friend David Icke says? David says that our sense of the possible has been completely deprogrammed out of us. That most people, when they hear what sounds like something out of a Steven Spielberg film, you know, our immediate instinct is to just go, ah, that's just absolutely crazy. It's got to be crazy. When you hear that, how do you deal with it? Do you not care because the work is important and you just do the work? Or do you acknowledge it? And do you try to overcome it? Because it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I suppose the vast majority of people who watch Sky News or Fox News, they think, Alfred Weber, interesting guy, but come on, that's just crazy, you know? How do you deal with that?
Yeah, no, I appreciate the way that you've framed this, and I very much appreciate the way that you've addressed the listeners' tweets, which they, you know, that certainly the cognitive dissonance between what we call the consensual reality and the exopolitical reality that I've been expressing, say, over the last half hour or so of the program is large. So let me kind of anchor this and give some framework. First of all, what I've been describing and the methodology and conclusions that I've set out in my second book, The Omniverse, grow out of an invitation that I received from Oxford University Press, which is a division of Oxford University, which operates according to the scientific method, to write a book on extraterrestrials and the law. And so in the book, The Omniverse, which describes the discovery of the omniverse as the third principle, the third principle cosmological body by which humanity understands the cosmos. I started with the universe and then the multiverse. The universe was discovered in about 3500 BC. The multiverse was discovered in 1895 by the American psychologist William James, and then in 2014, there were two scientists who independently wrote books on the omniverse. One was David Bertolacci, and the other was yours truly. And very often that happens where individuals in different parts of the world discover the same phenomenon at the same time. And so with regard to my book, what I did was use the scientific method. And that is, if you have a standard protocol and replicable results, that is what we call the scientific method. And you can call those results knowledge. That's accepted knowledge. So everything in my book, all the conclusions that I reach, I put them because I have a background as an attorney and as a judge, I put them within the context of forensic evidence and the law of evidence. And the standard that I use is not beyond a reasonable doubt, which is the standard that you would use in a criminal case if you're sending a person to jail for a crime. I use it rather the civil standard, which is more probably than not.
Well, that's very good, Alfred. It's very honest, that. And I like that about your interviews, and I like that about your book, that you will say that you've concluded because A and B and C and D came together as points of evidence, and therefore I conclude this. It's a very honest way of presenting evidence, I think. And it's also I suppose it's also a way that's more likely to get the attention of people whom are looking to shoot people down like you. You know, it is a very interesting way that you do it. And I just wanted to put that out there, not to in any way impugn you, because I wouldn't have you or anybody else talking about these subjects on the programme if I didn't like them, and if I didn't think that, you know, you were sincere and that you'd done the work that you'd done. Like I said, I don't know what to make of it. My great friend, David Icke, for years I used to interview David on radio programmes, and at times I would think to myself after, I just don't understand that. I find it difficult to comprehend that. And I just wanted to acknowledge that there will be people who can't get their heads around even certain things. But I want to mention exopolitics.com again. That's Alfred's website. It's fascinating. Links to his books, The Omniverse and Exopolitics itself, can be found there. He's a new book coming out next year, and he's going to be speaking again real soon, and we'll tell you more about that before we do go. Lots and lots of interest in Max Spears, of course. People saying that they find it very interesting that Hillary's name has come up around the work that Max has been doing. But I do want to say this, Alfred, and I think this is very fair to say. One thing that I've been very interested, one thing that's interested me greatly is watching you and observing you from afar over the years. It's very interesting how much of your investigations into, you know, what's out there, who's really in control, what we're in contact with and who we're in contact with and whom we're not in contact with. What's amazing to me is, and I totally get this, is that at times it's taken you down the Satanism route, hasn't it? And the satanic paedophilia route. Your investigations have often taken you down that road. Why do you think that is? What's the connection between the investigations that you do, the people that you investigate, and their connections with paedophilia? Why?
Yeah, you know, I'm very glad that you asked me that, Richie. And that's why right before the program, I mentioned to you that I have a new book, which is a personal memoir that's coming out early in 2017. And now that you talk about it, and now that you mention it, I think that's because of personal aspects of my life, of my personal life, that I'm very hesitant to talk about, because they involve, you know, the dark side, and they involve, you know, my personal struggles that I've had to go through that are very difficult to talk about. I'll give you some examples. In my own family, on my mother's side, one of my uncles rose to be the deputy black pope, which is the assistant to the head of the Jesuits in Rome. And they're a very, very satanic-oriented group. And so I knew all about that. And the Queen of England, Queen Elizabeth, used to call for my uncle specifically to go aboard her yacht, the Britannia, to be a, quote, spiritual advisor to her. And I knew that that wasn't spiritual advice. And I grew up in rural Cuba. And when I was ages 7 to 9, I was, attacked by a pedophile gang, and I was repeatedly pedophile rape by a pedophile gang from the ages of 7 to 9. So, and that is, you can look at the investigations that we did with the Hampstead UK pedophile ring. That really is very harmful. And I did not mention that even to my parents until I was in my 50s. But it informed everything that I've done as an investigator, as a war crimes judge. So it's like Daumier said that being in the law was like going through a sewer in a glass-bottom boat. And you asked a good question, and because I know and trust you so well, I guess I'm talking about it for the first time on your program, that I'm a victim of what I think is a satanic pedophile ring, and that my uncle was the deputy black pope, and that the Queen of England used to invite him as her spiritual advisor on the yacht Britannia, or so he told us. You know, I have no way of independently verifying that, but if they are, that means that they were up to no good.
It sounds plausible. Listen, it takes a lot of courage to say what you said, Alfred. My own experiences are, I was never sexually abused, but my audience will know because I've told them. I was physically battered for most of my childhood, and I just want to ask you on that, on you revealing that, and thanks for the courage that you've shown in saying that. Isn't it incredibly, first of all, it's horrible. It's first and foremost horrible and traumatic and devastating. But isn't it also, in a very macabre way, isn't it very, you can't not acknowledge that so many people who've investigated the sorts of things that you're investigating, so many of them have had this in their childhood. There's no coincidence there, Alfred, is there?
Right, because I think that we're driven because we know what the truth is. So that's why this new book that's coming out, it's 750 pages long, but I wanted to document everything. And the fact that we're on a planet where many of the governments, the houses of parliament, many of the institutions, the courts are governed by perps. And, you know, you have this horrid rings of perpetrators running officialdom. So so part of the work that has to be done is humanity has to deal with its shadow, you know, and it's not all pureness and light. We have to take the shadow and hold that up to the light and purge the shadow from our official, from our official governance and really get back to some clarity and morally clear people.
Can I ask you this? In your opinion...
Hello?
I just lost. No, I haven't. Alfred, sorry, I inadvertently muted you. Muted me, I should say, not muted you.
Oh.
We heard everything you said, inadvertently muted my mic there. My apologies. I had a cough off air and I forgot to unmute myself. So I've been reading David's books for years talking about paedophilia. And David has got, David believes that the predatory behaviour by those in power towards children, I think it's fair to say, he's not here now to answer this himself, but David believes that there are a number of different reasons why it happens. One of them is because entities want the prepubescent energy of children. Again, this is something I struggled to come to terms with when I first heard it, but as I opened my mind, ignored everybody else and began to read the evidence, I began to have a lot more sympathy with that. But another thing, Alfred, is trauma. Is trauma. It's to change the mental makeup of children, to affect generations of children by traumatizing them. And this is not just done through sexual abuse. It is done through sexual abuse, but it's also done through physical abuse and battering children. It's done through traumatizing children in school. It might be done through traumatizing children through the food they are fed and through vaccination programs. But back to the paedophilia, is that a big thing that's going on? You traumatize those children, and then you can use some of those children when they get to their late teens, their early 20s, their mid-20s. You can then use them for various covert projects. You can put them in various places, whether it's in, you know, the sort of fields that you talk about, the space exploration fields, all that sort of stuff. Do you think there's a lot of that going on? The trauma is a weapon that's being directed at our children en masse?
Oh, yes, totally. In fact, if you look at from an institutional point of view, the MKUltra mind control system, which supposedly was passed down from the Orion Greys and the Draco Reptilian Treaty system, passed on through both the agreements that the Nazis and the Americans signed in the early 1930s prior to World War II, the MKUltra mind control system is all trauma-based mind control. And we've had expert Jay Parker, who's a survivor of a multi-generational satanic ritual abuse family, says that in the United States alone, there are 34 million survivors of multi-generational satanic ritual abuse families, and that these 34 million individuals that are helping keep the world in utter turmoil. It's that the U.S. since its inception has, in a very real sense, been a satanic Luciferic nation based on trauma-based mind control. And I can verify that somewhat because Skull and Bones, which is the principal secret society in my alma mater, Yale University, I was not in Skull and Bones. I was in Torch and Talon, which was it was kind of a white hat. You know, we just went out, we rented a beach house and went out twice a week and were kind of an encounter male support group. We didn't do any of the black magic. But Skull and Bones was founded at Yale, not in 1832, which their official bio says. It was founded as the second chapter of the Bavarian Illuminati in 1776. The Bavarian Illuminati was founded in 1775. 1776 was the Declaration of Independence of the U.S. And so Skull and Bones' second chapter was founded that year and with a specific mission of infecting and taking over the American Revolution and ensuring that it was satanic and Luciferic, which it is. And that's why you have 34 million individuals in the U.S., according to Jay Parker, who is an expert on this and comes out of that community, that are multi-generational satanic ritual abuse families.
He was on this program last year, Jay, and he was very, very interesting. We had him on for an hour.
Great.
You know, Alfred, it's 13 minutes to the top of the hour. We've got probably about 6-7 minutes left on this. It's flown by again. We always say when we have you on that next time we get you on, we'll do a longer stint. But I know how busy you are, but I'm going to absolutely put it in stone. Next time we get you on, we'll do a fuller program to give you more time. But we've had a couple of questions about the moon. I don't want to be just jumping off subject there, but I also don't want to ignore questions that we're getting. We've had two questions about the moon. The first one comes from Karen, who emails, Richie, can you ask Alfred what is his view on the moon landing? Because if what Alfred is saying is true, the technology to land on the moon did exist long before the 60s. Does he then believe that they truly walked on the moon for the first time when they said they did? That's a brilliant question. And there's another question from Martin, a friend of mine, Martin Oakes, an old colleague of mine. Martin asks, does Alfred think there are alien bases, huge alien bases, not only inside the moon, but also underneath the surface of the Earth? Fascinating questions. Do you want to take the first one first? Had we been on the moon prior to 1969, Alfred, what's going on with the moon? And secondly, are there bases not only there, but here as well?
Okay, yes. Well, just just a bit of context first. My understanding is that the moon is actually a movable satellite. And the moon is much more important than the Earth cosmically, and that the moon is actually a center of galactic operations for this quadrant of the galaxy. That is an operating hypothesis which is beginning to have a lot of currency. One of the functions of the moon, according to some of the hypotheses, there are multiple overlapping hypotheses that one can run that run in parallel. In other words, our knowledge of the moon is growing daily, but there are contradictory parts of hypotheses because we don't have a full picture. One of the functions of the moon has been, it is thought, to run the Saturn-Moon matrix, which is a mind control reincarnation cycle operation to keep a certain category of souls reincarnating on Earth. And in commerce for a predatory group of extraterrestrials that has been in power in this quadrant of the galaxy for the last 250,000 to 500,000 years as part of what we call Star Wars or the Orion Wars, or in the Bible it's referred to as the Garden of Eden or the Lucifer Rebellion, and that's being wound down now. And so we starseeds are kind of the second wave that is coming in for the liberation of Earth from some fairly predatory forces that have been in charge of Earth for these last 250,000 years. You can call them the Dracos, the Orion Greys. You can call them the Anunnakis. And the first wave were the avatars like the Buddha, the Christ. And now there's more of the kind of spiritual technocrats, the starseeds that start beginning to come in. It seems I've spoken to multiple whistleblowers from top secret U.S. space programs who have been to Mars, who have seen inside reports. The Russians and the Americans have had joint Mars programs going back to 1962 and probably earlier to the moon as well. So
now these were joint programs between the Americans and the Russians.
Oh yeah.
I'll tell you what, Alfred, how fascinating is that if it's true? And I know you believe it to be true. And like I said, I'm the very interested observer here. I don't know, but I like what you do and I'm very interested in it. How fascinating is that in the context of what's going on politically between those two countries today?
Well, even at the height of the Cold War, there was a once a year meeting under the ice between two nuclear submarines where the Russians and the Americans would get together and arrange production schedules for the following year under the Cold War, because it was all orchestrated. You know, so this is, even under the Cold War, all of this is orchestrated. And what occurred of significance between Gorbachev and Reagan was the escape and activation of the PPAI, the Pathogenic Predatory Artificial Intelligence, that was embedded in a black goo under the Falkland Islands. And after the UK and US intelligence attacked it during the period of what was called the Falklands War from April to June 1982. And that period there is what brought about Glasnost and brought about a period of cooperation between Russia and the U.S., which Reagan articulated in his various speeches, that if the Earth had ever been threatened by an outside threat, humanity would drop all of its antagonisms. That kind of universal view lasted only a short period of time, and we're sort of back to the secret space program slave labor with the artificial intelligence that escaped in 1982, more and more terraforming Earth, so that Earth at the third density, the time-space hologram, will become, in effect, an AI robotized planet.
This is this is massive, and this is why when we get you back in the near future, we'll do a full program, because we're just going to run out of time any minute. I want to ask you a couple of very quick questions, my friend, and sure. If you could keep the answers to a couple of sentences. I know this is torture for somebody like you, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Do you agree with those who believe that the geoengineering programs that we see going on and the HAARP technologies and all these technologies, one of the multiple payoffs of these programs is to make a better atmosphere for some of these beings, some of these entities to survive here? Is there something to that?
Yeah. I believe that the geoengineering is part of the AI, artificial intelligence,
multifaceted,
transforming,
right?
Apparatus.
We're going to get into this next time you're on. But I can't not let you go without honouring a commitment to letting our listeners know where you're going to be speaking. The book is coming out early next year. We'll have you on before the book comes out to talk about it, of course. But you're going to be speaking in Europe soon. Tell us where you're going to be.
Yeah, I'll be speaking on October 29th at the Truth Conference in Warsaw, Poland, and I'll be presenting a new talk. I'm the keynote speaker, called The Ascension Hypothesis, and that is that we are building up to a density ascension, perhaps as soon as 2025, which is when all these grand cycles open up an interdimensional portal into the fourth, fifth density, in order to shake off, as it were, the PPAI, the pathogenic predatory artificial intelligence that has taken over the third density. And we're about to go into the golden age. That's the good news.
It's brilliant. And all the information is on Alfred's website, exopolitics.com. That's exopolitics.com. I have a theory about people like you, Alfred. I think when all is said and done, and we eventually, you know, when we leave this reality and we ascend to another reality and we find out what was going on, I think we're going to find out that guys like you were right 65, 70, 75% of the time. And I think that'll be an amazing thing, that. I really do. Because nobody's perfect. And, you know, you're investigating and finding things out as you're going along. But I think, there's a lot more to what you say than I mentioned earlier on. You know, people hear it and they think, oh, God, I can't be taking this. This doesn't make any sense. I think, you know, those that control things have worked on diminishing, reducing, destroying our sense of what's truly possible for the very reason that they don't want us to listen to people like you. I think you're fascinating. I recommend Exopolitics, The Omniverse, and Alfred's website, exopolitics.com. Please come on when you finish your speaking engagements. Come back on for a fuller show this side of Christmas, Alfred. I'd be delighted to have you back on.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you. Thanks, Alfred. The lovely Alfred Weber on the line to us there. Check out exopolitics.com. That really wraps it up. I've got no time, and there's so much more I wanted to ask him about there. I do appreciate those people listening to the program who don't buy it, and I did mention it, and I am not a fence straddler. I don't know. I find it infinitely fascinating. I do believe, because maybe I contradicted myself, I do believe when all is said and done and we find out what was really going on, that guys like Alfred, were going to find out that they were onto something. They were on the money. They knew a lot. Maybe they didn't know everything. Maybe they were off the mark in certain areas. But I believe that there's a lot to what they say and what they write about. That's my personal opinion. It's why I invite them on the programme, because I find it absolutely fascinating. I really do. And I enjoy it. It is time to wrap up. Kim Hutchison has presented a brand new series of meditations. We're going to hear the first one tonight, How to Get Back Into Your Love Pattern of Reality. And part one is called Your Channels of Illumination. Kim follows this. I'm going to finish now with some Stevie Wonder and say thanks for listening. I'll talk to you tomorrow at 8 p.m. BST. In the meantime, look after yourselves and one another. Thanks to my producer, Claire, to Simon and to Aaron. Bye for now. See you tomorrow. Bye now.